So without further ado, I would like you to please join me in welcoming our next storyteller, Mr. Michael Kay.
With all due respect to the firefighter, I've put out a few fires myself. Okay, so this is my story. It's May 20th, 1993. It's 8 a.m. I haven't slept in 3 days, and I've got 4 hours till the event of my life when the phone rings. It's Dad. Michael, I'm going to cancel it. The event is over. Like a ghost through the fog, I hear the call waiting signal, and in desperation, I switch over. Yo, this is Ice-T. This thing best still be going down. We still on? Fame, the ultimate dream. How was I going to convince Dad? How was I going to show him the light? Because you see, I got into this situation because of him. I was a dreamer because Dad was a dreamer. L'chaim, to life. And with that, Dad left a century of family in South Africa for the fame, fortune, and fun of the American dream. We arrived in Brooklyn in 1975, and I remember my dad said to me, Michael, America is founded on 3 things, truth, justice, and a little bullshit. But New York wasn't big enough for Dad, so we headed out west to California, where you could be rich, young, and rebellious. Dad, the ophthalmologist, donned a ponytail and introduced RK surgery, bucking a 20-year medical establishment just to prove that he could show the world a new way of seeing. Growing up with Dad was not an everyday experience. Every morning was a soundtrack. At 6:30, it was the Rocky theme. At 6:45, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And at 7 o'clock every morning for 10 years, on the boats and on the plane, ta-da-da, they're coming to America, home. You know, so some of this entertainment stuff rubbed off on me, and by the age of 7, I was watching 8 hours of TV a day, and that was before cable. At Hebrew school, I wasn't thinking about God. I was praying to Casey Kasem that Joan Jett would just get the #1 single for the 7th week in a row, I Love Rock and Roll. And any extra dime I had went to fuel my addiction to comic books with the Fantastic Four, and in particular, the What If comic book series, which focused on alternate realities. What if the Torch had wings? What if Mr. Fantastic was just a brain? Then, when I was 13, my dad renamed our home Club K. He actually had a logo made. He put a sign up on the building, and he gave me and my 7-year-old brother business cards with a map on the back that said, member in good standing. Needless to say, high school was an endless party, and I was the host. Then Berkeley honed my skills, mysticism and pop culture with a minor in radical activity, AKA Barrington Hall, for those of you who know. My friends and I broke into the Exxon recruiting meeting and threw crude oil all over the executives, then ran home and chanted Sufi poetry while Primus rehearsed in our basement. Then it came time to write my thesis, and I read Mick Fleetwood's biography, and it changed my life. The music, the magic, the super group with individual members, each with their own superpowers. Mick was Dad taken to an ultimate level in a strange Dreams #1 single, Mac-ish kind of way. I wanted to be Mick, and with graduation looming ahead of me, I decided it was time to live the dream. It was time to test the maxim, truth, justice, and a little bullshit. I told the administration that if we didn't get Mick to be our graduation speaker, Harvard and Yale would. They bought it, and so did he. Now, coincidentally, at the same time, my parents had decided to throw me a graduation luncheon. You know, just me, my brother, my mom, my dad, and my dad's friend Steve, the insurance guy, the kind of guy with a leather couch and a huge Spyro Gyra collection. They booked a room for 6 people, but I decided I had to get Mick there, the old dog. If I could just have lunch with the guy, now that would be cool. So how was I going to convince Mick? How was I going to get him to the luncheon? Thus was born the Berkeley Popular Culture Society. And our Humanitarian of the Year Award, our highest honor, Mick, with the specific intention of getting Mick to the first ever Berkeley Popular Culture Society Awards banquet. He bought it. The race was on. I had 10 days. I realized I needed a staff. So I placed an ad in BAM magazine that said, Celebrity Awards producer needs voluntary interns. Within 2 days, I had them. Notable mentions were John Stoner, who submitted a demo tape to me about a man trying to break into a mental institution. Leon Schotsky, who slowly managed to infest my apartment with a colony of fleas, and Jacqueline Reed, who between making me breakfast, lunch, and dinner, folded my clothes better than any girl I've ever dated. Things were in place. We had 7 days to go. But I decided I had to take things to the next level. I wanted more celebs. I mean, not just for me, for Mick, you know? And I'm a caring guy, you know? And thus was born the Lifetime Achievement Award, our second highest honor. We began faxing immediately. Agents, managers, my advisor said, nobody's going to come to this thing. Eventually, I get a call from Bob Merlis, vice president of publicity at Warner Brothers, who's been in the business for 20 years, and he says, look, kid, we have hard enough time getting celebrities to awards banquet in L.A., and they live here. But as any finagler half worth his salt knows, his critics. And one thing I knew about Bob Morris was that he was a sucker for 60s music. And I said, Bob, we've got Dick Dale. Yes, that morning I had confirmed the king of the surf guitar, and before I knew it, Bob Merlis and Warner Brothers were faxing out my press releases to invite the entire world media to the luncheon with my folks. Things were tight, though. We only had 4 days, and I was having trouble sleeping. I called the Claremont Hotel, and I said, look, we need a larger room. We need to seat at least 100 people. I need a stage, I need a mic, and I need a sound engineer. If I can get the whole academy there, I will. And I said, don't worry about it. My dad says it's cool. You know, I wasn't sleeping. I was having these visions of superstar Mick and kind of star Dick staring at each other over a plate of pasta, wondering how did they end up having lunch with my mom? And then I get a call from the head dean of the university. Apparently, she and 9 other deans wanted to have a meeting with me. Some of those faxes that had been sent out that mentioned Berkeley and my luncheon in the same sentence had landed in their office. Radical activity. What do you plead, Mr. K? John Lee Hooker. Yes, my sources had told me that the head dean of the university was a blues fanatic, and I'd managed to score the old dog that morning. Ho, 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 ho. So, with less than 24 hours to the event, we managed to secure our final confirmation. Ice-T himself. Now the pillars were in place. We had Mick, Dick, Lee, and T. But I decided I wanted to take it to the next level. I wanted to see if I could get them to play for free. Somehow, by burning the candle at both ends, I convinced Mick that John wanted to play and John that Mick wanted to play, and neither of them wanting to offend each other, they agreed, and so did Dick Dale, but on one condition. Dick had to have the 1956 Fender Dual Showman DWF-15 Dick Dale Special Amplifier. No problem, Dick. I'll get it. Just make sure you're there on time. With 18 hours to go, I sent the interns home to get a good night's sleep, get a rest before their second shift, and it all came down to me. I was the one making the calls now. I called concert halls. I called music stores. I called high school drama departments. Hey, Jeff, dude, get a load of this. Guy wants a Dick Dale amp. Dude, you're not going to find one of those things unless you're Leo Fender or Dick Dale himself. There were only 6 made. So now I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, I've got like 18 hours. I got to get this amp. What am I going to do? So I decided to go take a walk. And I managed to get back home by midnight. Having not slept, I'd been seeing a number of demons running around in the street. And I decided it was safer inside. And I walk in, and there's Jacqueline working the late shift. She hands me dinner, her specialty, corn on the cob and ephedrine. And she hands me the phone. She says it's a long distance from Italy. Hello?
"Hey, it's Jonathan Richmond, man. I got your letter, and I'm really flattered, but I'm in Italy, and I just can't make it." And I said, "John, that's cool, man, but, like, do you know anywhere I can find a Dick Dale amp?" And he goes, "A Dick Dale amp? There are only 6 of those things made. There's no way you're going to find one of those things." I'm thinking, oh, great. So now it's 2 in the morning. I send Jacqueline home. I'm all by myself, and I just pour myself a nice glass of scotch. And out of desperation and maybe the fleas, I decided, well, let me look for an answer. So one by one, I pulled out each Fleetwood Mac album from 1967 to 1993. And I'll tell you what, in that situation, landslide takes on a whole different meaning. Eventually, the sun rose, and I got that call, and it was Dad. "Michael, I understand that you've invited 65 people to this luncheon. This thing is not going to happen. I'm going to cancel it. Switch over. Call waiting. Yo, this is Iced Tea. I'm bringing my full posse for this thing. This thing best be going down." So I think, oh, shit. I think, what would Louis B. Mayer do in a situation like this? And I said, "Absolutely, man. And make sure you're there on time, dude, because I heard, like, through the industry and stuff, you're late sometimes at some of these events, all right?" So I switch over to the other line, and I can hear my dad breathing on the other end, and I got to fight the dark side, and I'm thinking, what can I draw on? And in the background, I hear this beat. I hear Mick Fleetwood's drumming, and I hear Stevie, "Drowning in a sea of love where everyone would love to drown." And I knew right then and there was only one thing I could do. You see, my sources had told me that secretly my dad really wanted me to go to law school. And so I said, "Dad, you know, I've kind of been thinking about going to law school. But, you know, if you really want me to get into the top-notch schools, I'm going to have to set myself apart from the rest of the crowd. I need to kind of show them the kind of clientele I can pull in. Now, look, I've got John Lee Hooker open for $100,000 a night on the Rolling Stone World Tour. I've got Ice-T, who just graced the cover of Time magazine for his Cop Killer debacle. And I've got Mick Fleetwood, who personally just headlined Bill Clinton's inauguration gala. And I said, "Dad, you've always wanted to become a senator, haven't you?" And he said, "Yes, I have." And I said, "Dad, these are the kind of people who can fund your campaign." And not only that, Mick knows Bill personally. And my dad said, "You tell Mick I want to sit at his table." And he said, "Don't ever forget I did this for you." So, Dad, tonight I want to thank you personally for funding my dream. But I got off the phone and I suddenly realized, fuck, I got to find that Dick Dale amp. The sun's up. I got 3.5 hours till the luncheon, 1.5 hours till the graduation ceremony. Here come the interns, this ragtag group I've put together. Jacqueline went through Vacuum, John, the ML Institution remix, and old Fleabag himself, Leon. And I get down on the floor and I say, "Guys, we've got to pray. Somewhere, somehow, we gotta find a Dick Dale amp." And Leon turns to me and he says, "Hey, my cousin's got one in his garage." I swear I saw angels flying that day, and I knew things were gonna be all right. And I got to graduation, and there was old Mick, the old dog himself, handing me my diploma to go out into the world. And then before a panel of Nobel laureates, you want an award? And then before a panel of Nobel laureates, he proceeded to give a long lecture about how he partied with the Eagles in the 70s. And we got up to the Claremont Hotel, and there they all were, the stars, my interns meeting their superheroes, and my brother Saul, my mom, my dad, and my dad's friend Steve, the insurance guy with his arm around Mick. And there was Ice-T trying to figure out why he was accepting an award from a bunch of ex-South African Jews. He got up on stage and he said, "Yo, like, I appreciate this and all, but the chicken was a little tough." And my dad looked over at me and he smiled and he winked. And I knew that I had finally done it. I had shown that I too could live the dream and introduce something new into the world. And little did I know that this would develop and this would grow and that pop culture would eventually be pop culture 2 and 3 and eventually would take me to the heart and darkness of the American dream. The horror itself when I would come face to face with O.J. Simpson. But that's another story. Back then, I was just 22, and I laid back and I looked out across the Bay Area, that silver California light flowing in, the emerald city of San Francisco, and the Golden Gate Bridge sparkling before me. And I laid back and I listened to the sweetest surf blues rap you ever heard.
Michael Kay.